各位观众大家好，我是卡拉，欢迎收看美国观察。5月30号是美国的阵亡将士纪念日，拜登总统出席纪念活动，感谢美国阵亡将士做出的牺牲。今天的节目中我们一同关注阵亡将士纪念日，是为了纪念为国捐躯的美国服役军人。美国总统拜登与副总统哈里斯周一到阿灵顿国家公墓向无名烈士墓献花圈。拜登总统还参加了与烈士家属在白宫南草坪种树的活动。拜登总统在阿灵顿国家公墓向无名官兵墓献花，之后向现场约3000名与会者发表讲话。他感谢阵亡将士的牺牲。拜登提到，现今世界正面临俄罗斯对乌克兰的侵略，侵袭民主与自由。他强调，自由需要付出代价，而民主需要争取。现场的与会者包括美军眷属、退伍军人组织、国防部长奥斯汀、美军参谋长联席会议及米利上将皆出席纪念仪式。拜登总统之后回到白宫，在几位阵亡美军家属的陪同下进行植树纪念仪式。华盛顿的阵亡将士纪念日游行活动在因新冠疫情而缺席2年之后，于周一在宪法大道重现。在刚过去的周末，摩托车手在华盛顿组织骑行纪念阵亡将士纪念日。许多美国人通过参观战争纪念馆或在烈士墓前献花来纪念这一天。拜登总统星期一面对记者询问是否将给乌克兰提供长城火箭系统，拜登总统回应说将不会送交能打击到俄罗斯境内的火箭系统给乌克兰。白宫资深官员回应美国之音质询说，拜登政府仍在考虑提供多管火箭系统给乌克兰。此前有媒体报道称，美国可能从陆军的库存中拨出一部分 M270 多管火箭系统，或是动用特别预算来购买此类系统援助乌克兰。美国国防部发言人科比5月27号表示，美国知道乌克兰公开与私下都询问过是否能获得多管火箭系统，不过他不愿证实是否已经做出决定。乌克兰东部城市西维耶顿涅茨克爆发了激烈的战斗，乌军在基辅抵抗俄罗斯的猛攻。乌克兰总统泽连斯基将这种情况描述为难以形容的困难。俄罗斯军队已经进入这座城市，电力和通讯被切断。市长斯特鲁克在电话采访中对美联社说，这座城市已经完全被摧毁了。斯特鲁克估计，自战争开始以来，该市有1500名平民因俄罗斯的袭击以及缺乏药物或治疗而死亡。俄罗斯外交部长拉夫罗夫周日对法国 TF1 电视台表示，莫斯科无条件优先考虑解放顿涅茨克和卢甘斯克地区，称俄罗斯视他们为独立国家。泽连斯基周一向欧洲理事会发表视频讲话，敦促为乌克兰提供更多帮助，并向俄罗斯施压以结束入侵。美国国会联邦参议员达克沃斯星期一率团抵达台湾，进行为期3天的访问，预计他将于周二的上午和台湾总统蔡英文进行会谈。美国在台协会星期一说，达克沃斯此行是其对印太地区访问的一部分，他将与台湾政府领袖讨论美台关系、区域安全、贸易投资、全球供应链和其他与双边利益有关的重大议题。达克沃斯参议员是参议院军事委员会成员，多次在国会为台湾发声，并推动或联署多项台湾相关议案。达克沃斯上星期五推出跨党派的强化台湾安全法，法案要求评估向台湾提供致命武器援助的机会，加强台湾的情报、监测和侦查系统。中国与太平洋岛国的外长会推迟考虑签署一个广泛的贸易和安全联合声明。中国外长王毅从5月26日至6月4日接连访问太平洋岛国中的8国。路透社报道说，北京谋求与该地区达成在警务、安全、数据通讯等领域的广泛的区域贸易及安全协议。不过该计划受到至少一个受邀国的反对。密克罗尼西亚联邦总统致信21个太平洋国家领导人，呼吁反对中国起草的这份宣言，称中国试图控制这一地区的通信网络、海洋和资源，并增加在这一地区与澳、新、日、美发生军事冲突的风险。王毅星期一敦促太平洋岛国不要对中国的意图太过疑虑。
当今，真相为重，掌握全球脉动， 只要点击 VOA Plus， 手指移动，信息即来，追踪政治动向，体验真实生活，世界各地的声音随时随地轻松获取。现在就下载 VOA Plus 应用程序 VOA Plus。
欢迎继续收看《美国观察》。每年的五月是亚太裔美国人传统月，在庆祝亚太裔美国人的文化与成就之际，许多人依然面临着种族歧视与瓶颈。美国之音白宫记者黄耀毅专访白宫官员，讨论了亚太裔美国人的贡献与困境，以及因应之道。来看专访。
Well, thank you very much, Crystal, for accepting this interview and take your time here to sit down with us.And, of course, we know that you are the executive director for the White House initiative of AANHPI. Can you give us a brief introduction on what do you guys do, what is the history, and what is the mission?
Yes, absolutely. So thank you, first of all, for having me today. The White House Initiative on Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians, and Pacific Islanders has actually existed for over two decades. It was first created in 1999 under the Clinton administration, and it has been reauthorized under every administration since. And our specific initiative was reauthorized last May through Executive Order 14031 that President Biden signed to expand this historic initiative and to really ensure that we are advancing equity, justice, and opportunityfor our Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander communities.
And I know every May that we celebrate the AANHPI Heritage Month, which is right now, how did this celebration come into place?
Sure. So in the 1970s, there was a push in Congress to be able to get recognition for our diverse Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander communities. So it actually started off as just a week-long celebration for Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, and that eventually evolved into a month-long celebration that we celebrate today. And actually, you know, every administration really since the 90s has issued a presidential proclamation to officially mark the month so that we can celebrate, you know, the diverse history, cultures, and contributions of our Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander communities. One thing I do want to note is that under this administration, for the first time, Native Hawaiians are explicitly included in the month, so that was not something that was done historically. But under the Biden administration, the president felt it was really important to ensure that we were naming this community that has often been overlooked in our history.
We all know that the Asian American had long contributed to the building of the nation. And according to the Chinese railroad workers in North America project at Stanford University, it said around 15,000 to 20,000 Chinese migrants contributed to the building of the Transcontinental Railroad. However, we also know many Asian American contributions are not well documented or publicized. So looking back, can you tell us what Asian Americans had overcame and what kind of achievement that we already gained?
Yeah, and I'm so glad you mentioned our history, because that is a big part of this month and beyond, just being able to uplift the really rich history, but also contributions of this population. And as you mentioned, Asian Americans have lived in the United States for centuries and have contributed greatly, but they've also faced a number of challenges that we also recognize throughout this month. So things like the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882, looking at Japanese American internment during World War II, and other painful parts of our history that we are still reckoning today, but also understanding that as we move forward, it's really important to understand these parts of our history to make sure that we're not repeating the same mistakes moving forward in the future. And that has been especially critical throughout the pandemic, because we've seen, unfortunately, how Asian Americans have been scapegoated and blamed for the pandemic, and that has led to an increase in hate crimes and violence targeting our communities.
We'll see a lot of people talking about the motto minorities. Some people call it a misnomer, but according to the data from the Society of Human Resource Management, that every $1 a white male worker earns, an Asian male worker earns $1.15. At the same time, Hispanic men earns only 91 cents, and black men earns 87 cents. So it'll look very good on books. Mm-hmm. However, does that really mean Asian Americans is doing better financially compared to other races, or...is not facing any discrimination nor facing a glass ceiling at work?
So I think that is, that's a great question and something that we also hear about constantly. And when we look at the numbers, it does look like oftentimes Asian Americans are doing better than other racial groups. And again, I will say in the aggregate, a lot of our communities do really well. So we do have some very high achieving, high earning individuals in the Asian American community, but that doesn't tell the full picture. And so that is why for our White House initiative, we have been really pushing for greater data disaggregation to truly understand the diverse needs and concerns impacting so many within the Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander population here in the United States. And we know that this is a very diverse population that includes over 40 distinct ethnic groups that speak over 100 different languages and dialects. So for those of us coming from Asia, that's not unusual because we know these are very different countries that have different histories, cultures, languages. But in the United States, we are lumped all into one category. So it is really important that we show that not every Asian American is Chinese American or Japanese American, but that we have a rich diversity. And because of that, we are seeing differences in terms of both our socioeconomic outputs, but also educational attainment, health inequities, other disparities that exist that are not always captured when you just look at the surface level data that aggregates all of our communities together. So I think for us, it is being able to recognize the diversity of our communities. So being able to uplift those unique histories and contributions and challenges also, but also realizing that we are a unified community and seeing where are some of the areas of overlap. And so, in the United States, we are seeing a lot of the same common issues, regardless of what, ethnic heritage people identify with within the broader Asian American, Pacific Islander diaspora. So I think it's for us finding ways to both uplift the differences, but also find common ground and really hone in on where those mutual interests lie. And what we've seen over the course of the pandemic is that so many of our communities have been hard hit, not just in terms of the anti-Asian hate, but also in terms of health disparities and also economic and educational inequities that have really been exacerbated. So those are all challenges that we're seeing that are cross-cutting across our communities, and we really want to make sure that they are getting the resources and the assistance that they need.
And during the pandemic, of course, like you mentioned before, a lot of Asian Americans being blamed for the pandemic, and then even you see people calling them to go back to your country and stuff. You're not feeling like you're not American, but at the same time, a lot of Asian Americans will be searching for your, trying to connect with your heritage, trying to connect with your root. However, the identity crisis, if we can call that, we are met with another challenge. So for example, at the early May, we see the Chinese ambassador to the United States, Qin Gang, he was in a speech and he was calling Chinese American to improve the China-US relationships. That's what should be a Chinese American's responsibility. And he said, no eggs stayed unbroken when the nest is overturned. And we know China had been advocating that Chinese Americans will always be Chinese, no matter where you go. And be calling the China the next is kind of like signifying a loyalty to China. So how can the Asian Americans uphold its heritage and roots and find your own identity at the same time to not being influenced by foreign countries like that? I mean, that's a tough question.
Yeah, that's a tough question, but it's an important question. And I think it's something that we see many Asian Americans, unfortunately, grappling with. It's just this perception that regardless of how many generations we have lived in this country, we are still seen as perpetual foreigners oftentimes. And there is that stereotype, people are like, well, you speak English really well. And it's like, okay, that's the only language that I know for a lot of Asian Americans. And, so I think there is oftentimes, again, a lot of stereotypes associated with our community. And unfortunately, that one of not having loyalty or patriotism to this country is one that is a stereotype often associated with Asian Americans. And we actually saw a recent report put out by the Asian American Foundation that saw that a lot of Americans polled and surveyed in that report actually believe that Asians are more loyal to their country of origin or what is their ethnic background than they are to America. And so that is a very troubling perception. And I think especially as we see tensions between the United States and China continue to rise, we are starting to see more of that where people view Asian Americans with suspicion and don't see them as Americans. So that's for our White House initiative. That is something that we are really trying to change, that perception of Asian Americans not being American, because we are. We are American in every sense of the word and give so much to this country. And I think that is something that we really want to ensure, that Asian Americans are able to be both proud of their ethnic heritage, but also be fully seen as Americans in this country.
But it also seems that when the Chinese ambassador is saying something like that, would not be helpful for Chinese Americans trying to find their own identity and identify as Americans. Would that be an opposite impact on the Chinese Americans when the Chinese officials signifying your loyalty should be to your original country?
I mean, I think that is
not being helpful.
Yeah, no. So I was going to say that's not helpful for sure. But I also think that Americans here in the United States, including Asian Americans, you know, they identify how they do, and their loyalty, I mean, is here to this country. So regardless of what foreign dignitary may say, it does not make it true, right? If that is just because they say that Chinese, all people of Chinese heritage, regardless of where they live in the world, should be loyal to the PRC, that doesn't mean that Chinese Americans here in the United States feel that way. So I think, again, a lot of the work we're doing is trying to really ensure that we can dispel harmful stereotypes and also misinformation like that, and let people know that, again, Asian Americans are Americans, that they are loyal to this country, not to any foreign countries. And so, we saw this, unfortunately, during World War II as well, and that is what led to Japanese American incarceration. It was the perception that Japanese Americans here in the United States, even though they were citizens, that they were not loyal. And so we are starting to see similar suspicions cast against Chinese Americans in the United States as tensions between the U.S. and the PRC begin to rise. But we need to not fall into those same, mistakes that we did during World War II, because, again, Chinese Americans living here in the United States are very proud of their culture, but they are also, fully American. And so their loyalty to the United States should not be questioned.
And I want to talk about the recent trend that the hate crime against the Asian Americans has been rising. And I think Rebecca gave me a number. It was like 300%. More compared to the previous years. How bad is the hate crime situation against Asian Americans right now? And what is Biden administration's policy addressing those issues?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. And, unfortunately, we have seen this spike in anti-Asian hate crimes and hate incidents over the past 2.5 years. And as you mentioned earlier, in fact, just over the past year alone, there has been a spike of over 300% in terms of the rise in hate crimes targeting Asian Americans in our major cities across the United States. So it is a very shocking number and something that we are very concerned about. One thing I do want to make very clear is that we have a president and a vice president who truly see our communities and know the power of their words and how we really must do all that we can to address this surge in anti-Asian violence and hate. And so within his first week in office, the president issued a presidential memorandum to condemn xenophobia and violence against the Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander community. And last May, he signed the COVID-19 Hate Crimes Act into law, which will address, how we track hate crimes, but also how we respond to them through the federal government apparatus. Last May, he also issued Executive Order 14031 to create our White House Initiative and President's Advisory Commission on Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians, and Pacific Islanders. And we have been hard at work to really ensure that we are coordinating a whole-of-government response to advancing equity, justice, and opportunity for our communities, including addressing anti-Asian bias, violence, and hate that have been impacting so many Asian Americans over the past 2.5 years. And as you mentioned earlier, that, really horrific attack last March in Atlanta, in which a gunman targeted 3 separate Asian-run businesses and killed 8 people, including 6 women of Asian descent, is something that has really been so triggering for our community. It was a really traumatic moment and something that we still continue to hear about on a daily basis, how so many Asian Americans are fearful to walk in their own neighborhoods, how they're afraid to go to the grocery store and do just normal tasks in their daily lives because they're worried that they're going to become a hate crime victim. So we know that we have a lot of work to do, but this administration has been doing so much to really ensure that we are promoting the safety and well-being of our Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander communities through resources from the U.S. Department of Justice, as well as through other means that the federal government has. And part of that work also means not just looking at how do we deal with this after the fact, but how do we actually look at hate crime prevention? And so much of that is tied to ensuring that we promote greater education as well as inclusion and belonging of our Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander communities and our histories and our cultures and our contributions to this country, which is exactly what, you know, we are doing throughout the entirety of the month of May, but also beyond that, making sure that people fully see our communities and view us as Americans. And one thing that we have talked about constantly is that regardless of, you know, the new laws or policies or, you know, initiatives that we put into place, you really cannot eradicate hate overnight. You cannot change people's hearts and minds just by signing a new law or just by issuing a new policy. So we know that is going to take time. And I think that is why we are really focused not just on the prevention aspect of hate crimes, but how do we, like I mentioned earlier, build greater inclusion and belonging for Asian Americans. And a lot of that is going to be, you know, require a longer term strategy. It's not going to happen overnight.
And we know Asian Americans have been involved with the civil rights movement for decades. So during the Black Lives Matter movement, and also the anti-Asian hate movement, we see many Asian Americans stand alone side by side with African Americans and Latino Americans. However, we also see some conflict between the communities. What is Biden administration's strategy to bridge those friction between minority groups and, you know, in terms of to reach a common goal?
So both the president and vice president have made it clear that our nation's diversity is its strength. And we, in addition to our White House initiative, there are actually other White House initiatives for the Black, Hispanic, and Native American communities. And we work very closely together because we think it's so important that we, instead of being divided and pitted against each other, that we are unified and that we can collectively uplift so many of the challenges that our communities face. And a lot of them are not unique to just our communities. We see them across the board impacting other communities of color. So we have really made it a priority under this administration to make sure that equity is embedded throughout the entirety of the federal government, which, although it doesn't sound like such a big deal, it is actually a very novel idea for the federal government to be prioritizing equity for underserved communities in this way. It has never been done before to this scale. And so being able to ensure that Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians, and Pacific Islanders are included in that process, but also that we are uplifting collectively all communities who have traditionally been marginalized and left out, oftentimes been, you know, left out of federal government efforts to advance opportunities for Americans, I think has been so critical. And, you know, what you had mentioned are some of these wedge issues where we see, unfortunately, you know, I mean, I'm not going to say that we have solved all race relations in this country or that there are no racial tensions. But I do think, like I said, under this administration, we have really tried to make sure that communities don't feel like they're competing against each other for limited resources and that we are actually able to collectively uplift the needs of all communities together so that we can really make sure that we're getting to the root of so many of these problems. We see so many of these tensions arise because historically our communities have been forced to compete against each other.
So we know one of the trailblazers for Asian American rights, Norman Mineta, had just passed away, and I would like to talk about a little bit of his what does he mean to you as an Asian American?
Yes, so Secretary Mineta's passing, I know, was such a devastating. It was such devastating news for so many of us to hear about last week. And he truly is, I mean, was such a trailblazer for our communities. In fact, almost every single major Asian American and Pacific Islander entity in the United States that exists can be traced back to him. So, and that includes our White House initiative. He was actually the first chair of our President's Advisory Commission when it was created under the Clinton administration over two decades ago. He also helped to found institutions like the Congressional Asian Pacific American Caucus in Congress, the Asian Pacific American Institute for Congressional Studies, so many of our national organizations that exist for the Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander community would not be here without him and without his vision and his legacy. So it was a tremendous loss for our communities. You know, he is someone that has truly been a trailblazer. He's a giant who led the way for so many of us to be where we are today as a community. And, you know, he himself faced discrimination as a child. He was interned during Japanese-American internment during World War II, and his patriotism was questioned. And yet, despite that, he was the most patriotic American I've ever met. He truly believed in this country's ideals and in the good of America, and displayed that throughout his entirety of his life and service to this country, from being an elected official as a mayor to a member of Congress to a cabinet secretary. He was the first Asian American ever appointed to a presidential cabinet, and he served in both a Democratic and a Republican administration. So we saw, again, just how much respect Secretary Mineta had from his colleagues, from his peers, and also the tremendous legacy that he leaves behind for my generation and for generations yet unborn.
Thank you very much, Crystal.
Thank you.
根据全球气象学家团队的说法，世界正在逐渐接近国际协议试图避免的变暖临界值。地球在未来五年内暂时达到该温度阀值的可能性接近50%。全球高温不利于农业生产，也不适合人类活动。科学家提醒说，提前采取措施防止气候变暖，是世界各国刻不容缓的责任。
The climate system doesn't change literally overnight. It changes by degrees, as it were. And we're already approaching the lower limit, the 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial levels that the Paris Agreement seeks to keep the global warming within. Every decade has been warmer than the previous decade, and the trend continues to be upwards.So, if you just sort of run it forward and extrapolate from the current trends, we will cross a global average annual temperature of 1.5 degrees at some point, perhaps in even the next 5 years, as our report indicates. But eventually, all the years could be above 1.5 degrees and beyond. Arctic area temperatures are likely to be 3 times the global average warming for the next 5 northern hemisphere winters. And when you think about what that might do to the polar ice caps and the Greenland ice sheet, for example, this has planetary implications because of the effect that has on sea level rise and circulation patterns.When we look at what's happening now, take South Asia, we have had extended periods in the recent weeks of temperatures over 120 degrees Fahrenheit. Those are temperatures at which it's very difficult for people to work, for example, for agriculture to be practiced. And so we don't need to look into the future to see that the impacts of climate variability and change and extremes are growing increasingly frequent and severe. The climate that we have now is a product of the atmosphere that we had 20 or 30 years ago. And if we wait another 20 to 30 years when we have a full-on climate crisis going on and then decide that it's time to really do something serious about reducing emissions,it will be too late.
以上就是今天美国观察的全部内容，感谢您的收看，我们明天再见。